Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Welcome into They Said It here on Football Sunday. Let's start off with Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel spoke to the media, I believe it was just the other day, either yesterday or Friday, and he was asked about his comments made on the Greg Hill Show on his after-game interview Monday morning at 6:30, and Vrabel was kind of jokey about it.
Mike, you had a quote this week on radio where you said, we'll need a more consistent and fine-tuned run plan that we believe in. That got me wondering, can you give the Cliff Notes version on how you guys game plan?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Do you have proof?
No. I know that doing a radio show at 6:30 on Monday morning after a loss is probably going to come back to haunt me, and it's going to get picked apart. And so I'll do my best to try to explain that after a week. But, you know, that's the position, and we can all look over at Stacy, but I get it. I'll be there every morning, Monday, 6:30.
Dude, can I jump in here, man?
Go for it.
I'm with him, man. You're going to get good stuff at 6:30 in the morning. He's not thinking clearly.
Unfiltered.
You know what, Ken? I've enjoyed my time here at EEI. I haven't been here. That was 7-8 months. I will never do a morning show. Never. Never.
To be on Greg's show.
I you know what? And it was one time, it was every Monday after every game, Ken.
Worst day of my life.
And
I hated it.
I did it for nine years. But it was just for one segment. One segment, man. And it was not the easiest segment. And it wasn't at 6:30, it was at like 8 o'clock. So I understand where Vrabes is coming from in those early morning interviews.
Yeah, I've been doing it now.
You're going to say things that you later you're going to regret.
Yeah, I've been doing it now for 3.5 years. I say things I regret all the time.
It's Greg. I do things at night. I say things at night I regret all the time too. But I didn't love that from him. I just didn't. It sounded like Gerard Mayo walking stuff back.
Ooh,
that's what it sounded like. That's what it made me think of. And I heard other people saying that too. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, like I understand he's not like Mayo in a lot of ways.
Does he get a pass for it just because we kind of like him a lot, or
he gets a pass for it because he has more experience as a head coach and doesn't look like he has no idea what he's doing.
Right.
But he sounded like Mayo there. A little bit,
for sure. Yeah, 100%. That is burn some cash. That is all those things that he just eventually
Ramondre Stevenson
walked back. Yep. Exactly. Let's go over to the Patriots' opponent this week. That would be the Miami Dolphins. Tyreek Hill talked about not having a 30-yard catch in quite some time.
Reason, rhyme or reason, you haven't caught a pass for over 30 yards in a full year.
I'm trying to piss me off today.
No, I'm not trying to piss you off. I'm just trying to ask you what is going on, because we see the speed is there.
Yeah.
But are the throws there?
I don't know, bro. Like I say, I'm just grateful to be here, bro. I love my job, bro. Hey, it'll come. It's going to come.
Yeah, to be fair, to Tyreek's credit, I believe he would have had one in that game against the Colts, but his own head coach didn't throw the challenge flag like a dope.
Oh, yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, that was deemed incomplete.
Isn't that amazing? He hasn't had a catch over 30 yards in over a year, and yet that's the team that led the NFL in yak yards last year. The Miami Dolphins led the NFL in...
Well, Devon Achan was a huge reason for that.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like the Patriots haven't had anyone catch a ball over 30 yards in like 5 years.
Since before COVID. I'm starting to get, and this might just be me, like, I don't know, trying to reverse jinx this or something. Mm-hmm. I'm getting a little bit of Jacksonville vibes from this Dolphins team. Remember last year the Patriots were set to see Jacksonville.
And then Jacksonville had to
spend that whole week in London after they had a horrible game and they all hated each other. Mm-hmm. And the Dolphins are already doing a players-only meeting this week.
Yeah, second week. Wow.
And it's like week two and everybody thinks Mike McDaniel is going to be the first coach fired. Like, I do feel nervous if we're going to see a difference between Mayo's culture and Vrabel's culture with this team. I think this is the kind of game where they absolutely have to prove it against a team that just looks like they're in shambles down in Miami.
Well, Mega, you brought up all of the negativity being spewed at the Miami Dolphins from the media, a lot of it coming from us. Well, Tua talked about all that negative media this week.
I think it's hard for me because I don't see any of what you guys are talking about. Like, mm-hmm. I don't have any social media. I go home. I'm with my kids, with my family. The kids want to watch Disney Channel or Disney Plus. Like, going to put whatever's on for them. Then I'll play, like, games with my wife while I'm there. So I wouldn't say I get to hear a lot of that or see a lot of that. But it doesn't matter anyways. Are they going to help us win the game? Are they going to help us lose the game? Like, that starts within. And so if we can look at each other and look at the things that we can correct and things that we can help each other on to move forward, to hopefully get a win, you know, this upcoming Sunday, you know, I think that's what we should be focusing on.
Outside
coping hard right there.
Yeah, Tua has Instagram. Right, I'm looking at it right now. He posted on September 2nd.
I think the bigger question is, what games do you think he plays with his wife? Are they big Scrabble people?
Dude, I was thinking the same thing. Mm. What are the games? Card games, probably.
Ooh, card games. Probably. I am a fan of card games. I'm a big cribbage guy.
Can you play cribbage with two people, though?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay. 100%. Okay. Yeah, it's made for two people or four people, but you can also
My
play three people.
My guess is
just
they
annoying.
Play cribbage together, if
Ooh,
I had to
okay.
guess.
Okay, love that.
Yeah.
What I would game? Be a big fan.
Dominoes. Backgammon.
Ooh, love playing
backgammon's okay. a two man game.
If you watch Jeopardy with your significant other, is that considered playing Jeopardy?
No, yeah, it's no. not considered playing. You're watching.
That's our game.
Are you guys? Are you like highly competitive?
Oh, totally.
Like who can get the answer out
Except
first?
I've been accused of being the quote James Harden of answering Jeopardy questions because I just haven't. I have an answer for every single question. And so my husband will be like, you're so far in the negative, you don't get to participate in Final Jeopardy.
You just blurt out whatever. Yeah, okay.
Just keep taking shots.
I'm like, Nova Scotia. Great Britain.
You miss the shots you don't take, right? 100% right. of them.
That, Michael Scott, Wayne Gretzky, absolutely.
Tua sounds like he's coping really hard when he's talking about
massive
wife and his kids and all this stuff and his home life.
That's
it's like,
all
right, man, you had a bad game, all right? Let's just move on.
Honestly, is it crazy to think that this Dolphins team might be better right now with Zach Wilson? Because they seem to all hate Tua. It feels like. At least Tyreek Hill is.
I mean,
everyone
hate
famously
Zach Wilson.
Hates Zach Wilson in that Jets locker room.
They'll just hate Zach Wilson.
Well, eventually, but at least for a couple weeks, it might look better.
No.
All right. I figured I'd pose the question.
But you know what? That is a good test going forward. If things look really bad with the quarterback, now the question is, would it be better with Zach Wilson? Like, that's
the
standard
line.
That
I forgot
we're
going to Wilson.
That's
Who's
the Mendoza line.
It's the Zach
more.
Wilson line.
Yeah, the Mendoza line.
He'll never go in.
So let's, talking about quarterbacks in the NFL, Tom Brady had a pretty popular quote this week. He joined Colin Cowherd and talked about how the NFL game has been dumbed down for a lot of young quarterbacks. Here was Tom Brady.
But you're right. There's just not a lot. There's a lot more, I would say, physical development happening at a younger age, but less, I would say, mental, emotional development from quarterbacks. And, you know, I had a chance to talk to Andy Reid about that, had a chance to talk to Patrick Mahomes about that this week. You know, one of the, they said, look, Patrick flat out said, I can't thank Alex Smith enough for everything that he did for me. All I did was ask him questions in the meeting room my first year. And I look at my first year. That's all I did with Drew Bledsoe. Aaron Rodgers had 3 years to sit behind Brett Favre. Eli Manning sat behind Kurt Warner. And there's a lot of guys, and I would say a lot of successful players that weren't kind of thrown into the fire. But that's very much the state of the league. And I think we've dumbed down the game in so many ways to allow for a lesser caliber developed player to get in there and lead an organization.
And I think this kind of plays back into a little bit of the comment I made earlier where there's just no patience anymore. NFL right. teams want to win. They want to win now. It's such a popular product that teams want to be competitive that they put these young up-and-coming star quarterbacks that they draft in right away, even into bad situations. You look at with the Bears last year every countless time the Browns draft a quarterback and stick him into their starting lineup and he stinks. And it's just a lot of times NFL organizations fail these young quarterbacks faster than the young quarterbacks fail the organization.
It's hard. It's really hard because you can look at Drake May. So he's been here for 2 years, he's had two different offensive coordinators, two different head coaches. And you can say, well, they have a terrible plan. Well, whose plan is it? Was it the last year's head coach's plan, or is it this year's head coach? Is you know, is the owner, is it the owner that's supposed to have a plan for these young
quarterbacks? Well, it'll be incumbent on, like, the GM, right? Because it's the same guy that's been, the GM's been here a couple years. So if his if it's his plan, then his plan is going terribly. And so that guy is the one failing young quarterbacks.
My guess is, though, no GM is going to supersede the new head coach and who he hires and tell him how he needs to play his young quarterback.
Yeah, no, you're right, but at the same time, like, that's why you need to have GMs and coaches kind of in lockstep, right? That's what
the most successful
organizations have a GM and a head coach that are very much seeing the same thing, have the same vision. And unfortunately, a lot of NFL teams fail young quarterbacks in that regard.
And this team hasn't had anything close to that. I mean, really,
you're 100%
in the last two young quarterbacks that they've had, it has just been a mess. I mean, really, it has. And there's no continuity. There's really been no way to sort of get them from point A to point B. You know, it just doesn't seem like that's in the cards.
Wasn't Brady just a couple months ago kind of scolding quarterbacks for not studying
as
much as
he? He's scolding everybody.
That's what I'm saying. I think he's kind of scolding everybody about nobody studies like I did. Nobody prepares their quarterbacks like I got prepared.
That's Tom right now.
Nobody sits behind the other quarterback. It's like, well, did you do that for Jimmy Garoppolo or... I don't remember that.
Did you see his glasses, by the way, in that clip?
Yeah. I like those glasses.
Big glasses.
I thought it was a good look for him.
You think so?
Yeah.
There's got to be like Russell Westbrook fake glasses.
He looks like Morty Seinfeld.
But
right?
You understand that's his thing, though, right? You know, when he met Giselle, it was all about different looks. He came to training camp with a different haircut every year.
I remember that, yeah.
Like in different colors.
He's a fashion guy.
That's what he does. Yes.
Well, let's end, they said it today, on a bit of a funny note. Brian Kelly got a W yesterday for LSU and then popped off on a reporter.
What are you seeing with your offense?
Stop. Really? Is that the first question? We won the game 20-10. Try another question. What do you want me to tell you? I just laid it out for you. We played the game to win the game.
All right. How about third down then? What is going on with third down?
One game. Last game, we were great on third down. You're looking at this from the wrong perspective. LSU won the football game.
These college coaches, they can't stand being challenged, boy.
No.
Can you imagine
Nick
Brian
Saban
Kelly in this town? Like, hey, don't question me.
Yeah.
Well, that's why a lot of them.
That's a Chelsea temper right there. You know, you can tell. That's where he grew up, I think. Him and Stiz. He went to St. John's, didn't he? Did he go to
St. John's?
I think he did. He went somewhere around here. Yeah, St. John's Prep. Yeah. He went to St. John's in Danvers. But yeah, he's a Chelsea guy.
Oh, man. Yeah, you just got to take a deep breath, brother. Like, you got the win. Relax. Have some fun. Who cares? Like, if he wants to ask you about third down, answer a question about third down.
But you realize the question he asked, the first question that got him all worked up was just talk about your offense.
Yeah.
Right? we won the game. All he said was talk about your offense.
What do you want the first question to be? How do you feel after that win today? Yeah, I feel great. Thank you. It was a good win. And then it's like, what are we doing here?
Look. I don't like it at all. Yeah. I'm always more protective of the media, obviously, but I just
At least he wasn't using that fake Southern accent anymore. Yeah.
That accent is
really
great,
was that a real thing?
I am.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, buddy, buddy, buddy.
So good. That'll do it for They Said It today, Arcand.
All right, very good. That is They Said It with Chris Schein. This is WEEI Football Sunday, and coming up next, we will hear from Tom E. Kern, get his take on this game coming up here and the week that was against the Raiders. Also, we'll have your inactives coming up at 11:30. That's next. First, here's Chris Schein. Get you caught up on what's trending.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market. Your New England Patriots kick off at 1 o'clock this afternoon down in Miami to take on Tua and the 0-1 Dolphins. The Patriots, we already know, are out for today's game, are Christian Gonzalez and Keon White. Morgan Moses is questionable, and if he is held out of the game, rookie Marcus Bryant would be in line to get his first career start. The Patriots also traded away Jalen Polk yesterday to the New Orleans Saints. Make sure to keep it locked right here on WEEI after the Patriots game for the Six Rings postgame show hosted by Hart and Fitzy. The Cowboys have made Tyler Smith the highest paid interior offensive lineman in the NFL with a 4-year extension worth $96 million. So a lot of that Micah Parsons money now getting reallocated to guys like Deron Bland and Tyler Smith. Full slate of action for you today. In the 1 o'clock window, we have the Jaguars at the Bengals, Giants at Cowboys, Bears at Lions, Rams at Titans, 49ers at Saints, Bills at Jets, Seahawks at Steelers, and the Browns travel to Baltimore to take on the Ravens.
in the 4 o'clock window. Only three games. We got the Broncos are at the Colts, Panthers at the Cardinals, and then the big one today, a rematch of last year's Super Bowl as the Eagles head to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs. You can listen to that game over on AM 850. Sunday Night Football tonight is the Falcons and Michael Penix in Minnesota against J.J. McCarthy and the Minnesota Vikings. You can also catch that game on AM 850 with kickoff at 8:20. Boston College fell to Stanford last night as Billy O and the Eagles went scoreless in the second half. Final score of that one, 30-20. In non-football news, your Boston Red Sox lost to the New York Yankees yesterday 5-3. Brian Bayo went five innings, allowing four runs on five hits, including a Jazz Chisholm home run in the fifth. Sox try to salvage the series this evening on Sunday Night Baseball with the pig on the mound, Garrett Crochet. First pitch 7 p.m. right here on the Shaw's and Star Market Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's and Star Market, go shopping, get rewarded. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game for you, and make sure to tune in to the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show at 6:10 with Joe Weil. Today is the day. It's the Shaw's and Star Market Grand Slam Summer Sweepstakes game for our 10 lucky finalists. If our hometown team hits a Grand Slam during the game, our finalists will win free groceries for a year from Shaw's and Star Market. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
PEI.com.
Patriots defensive lineman Milton Williams on with Jones and Keefe earlier this week, asking about defensive coordinator Terrell Williams, who's still away from the Patriots with an undisclosed health matter. We don't know what it is, but we do know that a different assistant is going to be calling defensive plays Sunday against the Dolphins. That's today, and that would be inside linebackers coach Zach Kerr, who is going to be doing that. Vrabel talked about it a little bit. You heard Milton Williams discussing it there. This is sort of a story that it's not really gotten a ton of attention because everyone's so focused on the offense and Drake May and what's going on with all of that. But with all the investing that was made in this defense, to have the leader of the defense be away this much has got to be a problem. And, you know, Ted, you've been in enough of these team meetings. Having assistants come in and they're calling the plays now, and you're early on in the season trying to gel as a defense. What's that like?
It's not easy when you consider if you had a veteran team. You know, the defenses I played on were veteran laden defensive type teams. You could get away with it a little bit more, but I kind of look at Terrell Williams through the same prism as I'd look at maybe like a Romeo Crennel. Just stylistically, his overall disposition, how the players kind of feel about him. He's got a more of a grandfatherly kind of approach. He's not as intense as Mike, so he kind of plays off of Mike really well, and I think he's a stabilizing kind of a voice there. So that concerned me when it happened in the offseason. I was worried about that because the defense wasn't getting talked about much, and it should be, and the defense did not play well. You should not be giving up 400 yards of total offense to Geno Smith and the Raiders like you did. You know, it was Terrell Williams who was calling the play when they – gave up that that Trey Tucker touchdown pass, and he dropped both Milton Williams and Christian Barmore into zone coverage on those plays. So which was a crazy play. I couldn't believe that you would drop your two guys that you pay combined $46 million to rush the passer into pass coverage on a blitz call in that situation. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see a different game. I mean, they blitzed 40% of the time last week against the Raiders. I don't know if that's just who they are or if that's going to change week to week, but I am curious to see with the new defensive coordinator how he calls the game, how he approaches some of those, you know, third and long situations. They call blitzes and got burned, which I thought was too aggressive. So I'm curious if the new play caller, the middle linebackers coach, has a different style in which he calls. But this is kind of not what you want, guys. I mean, I know it's life happens, but this is not an ideal situation for this Patriots.
Does it
defense.
Give you any like confidence at all that he's already done this in OTAs and like so he has some experience with these guys and calling those plays?
And that was the first time he's ever called plays like at any level.
True, fair point. To but your like point, at least he's done it.
Yes, yeah. I think there's a they're comfortable with him being up there addressing the defense, no doubt.
Yeah.
I just think for as much as we and mostly Shime have been coming down hard on the offensive play calling and strategy last week, I do think that the defensive play calling, as you just illustrated like just what you just said, like that felt so obvious in the moment. And I think
That third for, and 20 was inexcusable.
Blitzing on third and 20. That makes no sense to me.
What are we doing?
Get the hell back.
Like what the Colts, a team that people don't have a ton of confidence in, what they were able to do against Miami last week, holding them to 8 points, forcing Tua into 3 turnovers. Like, I think that's the standard that you should expect from the Patriots, even, you know, with this going on the side. I think that this is kind of a prove-it week for your defense, and it's really unfortunate Terrell Williams has to step away, and hopefully he's back next week, but that doesn't change the expectation for me.
But I also think I think the defense would have looked different. I think what their idea is they want to keep the same mindset, and wrong or right, I think their game plan was to keep the same mindset as if they were going to have Christian Gonzalez on the field. They didn't, which is why it looked a little worse, but I think the idea is that when he gets on the field and he's locking up Brock Bowers or Jacoby Myers, that defense is going to get way more pressure just because he's able to cover a little
bit better. Let me just put it to you this way, okay? Last week, the Colts played pretty much 80% of the time they were playing zone.
Yeah.
Okay? The Patriots historically like to play the Dolphins in zone. Before, and Tua would carve him up. However, if last week is any indication what this week's going to look like, the Patriots are going to play a lot of man.
They love playing man. Okay. Vrabel wants to play man coverage.
Miami couldn't move the ball at all against a team that was primarily playing them in zone. So, okay, you want to play man? They have man beaters. You better. If they start, you know, if you're going to play man and you're going to blitz and he starts chewing you up, you better adjust to zone coverages like the Colts did, and were very good at it last week.
Well, it's just Milt even told Jones and Keefe, like, they have track stars. That was his exact word, was track stars. Like, you should be well aware that you cannot get beat deep by another Trey Tucker in the end zone again. You can't. Like, Jalen Hawkins and Craig Woodson have to do a better job of playing center field and playing and making sure there is nothing getting behind them. If they keep everything in front of them, the defense will be okay. But the issue is making sure nobody gets behind.
Yeah. The Colts, by the way, without Gonzalez on the Patriots defense, I think the Colts defense is superior to them. I mean, they have better players. They have, for their secondary, Kenny Moore, former Patriot legend, Xavien Howard and Chavarius Ward. Like, I love that secondary. Zaire Franklin, DeForest Buckner, Latu. I mean, they got guys DeForest all up and down Buckner. That defense that the Patriots, who have improved their defense, I don't think really have that kind of high-end talent. No, and I also don't think that they've really gelled yet. I mean, that's another part of this, that you throw a bunch of guys into a defense and expect them all to be in important roles like they are with Williams and, you know, everybody. Yeah, I just feel like that's something that's going to take some getting used to, and it looked like they were not used to it yet. In that first game. For more on that and for more on this matchup, we are now joined by NBC Sports Boston's Tom E. Curran, who joins us here on Football Sunday, WEEI. Tom E., how are we doing today?
Tremendous. Good morning, everybody. How's it going?
Good morning to you. Tom, it is the Patriots. It's the Dolphins. I think a lot of people have said this week, that it looks like a must-win game for both teams. Would you agree with that assessment? And if you had to pick one or the other that it's more important for, who would you lean towards?
I think it's certainly more important for the Dolphins because their head coach is hanging by a thread, and that's not the case for the Patriots. And I'm not a big must-win guy because the question is must-win. What happens if you lose? Then what? Like, they're not disbanding the team. They're not folding. They're not getting kicked down to the next tier. So they don't win, and then they win next week against Pittsburgh. It's not that critical. Must-win is if you're a playoff hopeful and they're about to be eliminated. So, to me, I'm not a big must-win guy. But it's more important for the Dolphins. It would certainly be well appreciated by Patriots fans if the Patriots were able to win. But this is a team, New England, that has scored more than 24 points just 3 times in the past 35 games. Just 3. So, until I see proof of concept with this Patriots team, I look at a team that went 6-3 down the stretch last year, Miami, and say, where do people get off thinking the Patriots are better?
Real quick, Tom, we just got the inactives list. Gonzalez out, Eric Gregory is out, Keon White, Caden Wallace, Tommy DeVito, and Efton Chisholm. I know a lot of people, certainly some people in this room, were very excited about the prospect of Chisholm playing today. Looks like he's inactive.
Yeah, to me, and the Caden Wallace one jumps out because you're looking at Jalen Polk traded yesterday. Javon Baker's already playing someplace else. Caden Wallace, the third-round pick. How about 0 for 24?
Ouch.
That's stunning to me. But for Chisholm, I think that you need to get more attempts to DeMario Douglas. Make sure that he is on the field as much as possible, because he is probably your toughest cover in short area. So I'm not surprised that they didn't break glass in case of emergency with Chisholm.
Tom, you had a spirited exchange with Phil Perry on Early Edition this week over the blitz rate from last Sunday. I really enjoyed it. I wonder if you think they're going to bring that same strategy against Tua and trying to pressure him and force the turnovers that the Colts saw last week, and if they should, or if you're expecting something different.
It's fascinating because, as Christian just alluded to, they're so inexperienced on the back end. So in one respect, you know, go ahead, play man, blitz, hurry him up. But he also gets rid of the ball as fast as anyone in the league. And the three turnover game is, Mego, just such an outlier for him. When he does go into the turnover tank, he stays there. But generally speaking, he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league at taking care of the ball, making a read, getting it out quickly. So if you want to blitz him, I get the merit of it. But if it's not working, get off it, which is what they did not do last week. If it's not working against Geno Smith, and then in the fourth quarter in a critical third and friggin' 20, they have a 25-yard completion because you blitzed and Carlton Davis wasn't able to stick with a rookie, well, that's just, to me, the final nail in the coffin and saying, why do you keep putting your hand on the hot coals when you know they're hot? So I think that they need to be a little more malleable with their scheme today.
Tom, I have been leading the charge, the anti-McDaniels charge at this point, because I can't stand the way the offense is called. How do you feel, from your perspective, how this offense suits Drake May and if they're going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think they're definitely going in the right direction with a guy who's developed as many quarterbacks as he has. Last week, they threw for 287 yards. You know the last time they did that? The opener of 2023 against Philadelphia, when they fell behind 17-0 and they had to throw it all day long. So I don't know if this is the right week to say McDaniels has got to go, because you just had more production from the passing game than you've had in, what is that, 34? It's a lot of games.
So, Tom, I would just counter with that they had the lead at halftime. Why are you throwing 46 times?
I think that if you look at it, and I'm not trying to be a dink, but there were first down penalties. There were negative plays on first down. There was a pick that set them back. There was a compressed second half. You should have run him, what, three carries in the second half? They went to Gibson, May, and – no, Gibson, Douglas, and it might have been May. But either way – neither Henderson nor Stevens had touched the ball. But I think nobody wanted to do that, but I think sometimes score and situation dictates it. So I just don't look at the number of carries in the second half of the opener as a smoking gun for this isn't going to work.
Tom, the units that got the most kind of just critique and criticism is the offensive line. And last week, the offensive line, I thought, did okay. You know, I thought they had a pretty good game, not very good against the run, but in pass protection, only giving up 18 pressures when you consider they dropped back, 53 times. I think Drake May had the sixth most time of any quarterback in time to throw. So he had pockets to throw in. And I think that's kind of one of the bigger kind of inside stories of this game is just that front seven for the Dolphins against the Patriots offensive line. How did you think the Patriots offensive line handled themselves? And I guess reports are that Morgan Moses, he was out there warming up. It looks like he is going to be a go. So it looks like it's just the same two rookies on the left side starting today. But just overall, your impressions of the offensive line after the first week?
I thought that they were okay. Just like you, Teddy. You got to be able to clear more people out of there. But at least your running backs weren't getting hit in the sternum at the same time the ball was being put in their belly. So that was a big advance. And you're right. May had plenty of time to throw. Take that first third down of the game when he overshoots Douglas on the right sideline. There is protection there. There's time there. There were time on throws that he just did not execute on. So to me, the entire first week more revolves around inability defensively to say, this isn't working, let's cut the crap, A, and B, Drake May's jumpiness. So it really boils down to that for me.
Tom, can you take us inside the Jalen Polk trade a little bit? He's on IL. It was a late-round pick swap. What was sort of the point of moving on from him when they did?
I don't think that he was a big hit. I don't think that his approach was a big hit. I don't think that his attention to detail in 2024 was a big hit. It took him a long time to get on the field. This offseason, he gets on the field during training camp, gets immediately hurt in the first preseason game. When you talk about culture and entitlement, as Mike did early on, I think that he wants to have no questions at all about the individuals who are there. And if you're going to have somebody rehabbing and around the team, even to an extent all season long, who you had questions about coming in, what's the upside of having them there? So I wonder if – I can't imagine that New Orleans called and said, hey, can we trade for your injured guy? So I think the active interest in moving Jalen Polk must have remained. So they turn a second into a sixth and also have to give up a seventh for him. And it's just it's insane. Insane.
Any
potential... you could have done better with a draft guide.
Sure. I mean, you certainly could have. But any potential pushback from someone like Elliot Wolf? I mean, that was a second-round pick that he made there. And you're giving up on the guy that he targeted very quickly.
He would be, if he's pushing back, he's pushing back with soap bars of soap strapped to both feet. He's got no, that man has no purchase at all to push back.
Okay.
Tom, I wonder if you have any kind of working theory as to why Drake looked so inaccurate last Sunday. And as you said, jumpy. And, you know, it's just people have been critiquing his footwork, his throwing mechanics. People wondering if it's his processing because of everything that he has on his plate. And I wonder where, what side of the street do you kind of lean more towards in terms of why he looked the way he did last week compared to what he looked like a lot of his rookie year?
I think his brain is a snow globe at this juncture as he transitions into a different offense. And I think they made it easier for him at times last year, and he was allowed to run more often. They want him to throw from pocket. They want him to process. And Phil had a really good observation. When May was asked this week about his inaccuracy and what the common denominator was, he said it was rushed throws. And I think that May is going to be a good player, but between the time he goes from the huddle to the line of scrimmage, everything's fine. Then the ball gets snapped, and it seems to me as if he's processing. And if you're processing a lot and trying to be sure of what you're seeing and you don't get a lot of the pre-snap info that you want, probably because the defense is saying, I think we can confuse them here, then you're going to finally decide on your place that you want to go with the ball, and you have to hurry because in that case, again, I'll use the DeMario Douglas, the first throw of the game, he was heading toward the sideline. He probably should have delivered the ball, you know, 0.4 of a second earlier, but he didn't. It was getting late, and he had to hurry that throw. You see it, too, when he starts to drift. Even the touchdown throw last week, his body is completely wide open after having airmailed Douglas. So I think he's got the yips to an extent. I think that he is thinking a little too much, but it's not so dire that you don't see some really good throws, too, and some real good command when he's like, oh, I know what this is. Boom. So it's going to be, as we talked about, 55 college starts for Jaden Daniels, 26 college starts for Drake May. There's just a huge gap. I mean, 30 games is a lot of freaking time, and it's just a lot of catching up that a 23-year-old quarterback has to do. Just the stuff that Brady was talking about that you guys alluded to. You know, May actually, I tried to actually give May a nice little nest to learn in, and Brissett and the offense was so bad that it took a while. It didn't take a while. They had to eventually go to him, and he wasn't really learning anything because the team was so bad. So to me, it's just the learning curve of a raw quarterback joining a bad team as opposed to, say, a raw quarterback like Mahomes joining a good team or Josh Allen joining Buffalo, which had been a playoff team the year prior to his arrival. It's tough to go to a bad team. You end up getting Darnolded sometimes.
That is the voice of Tom E. Kern. I like that new verb, getting Darnolded. That sounds like a tough thing to have happen to you. Tommy, great stuff as always. We look forward to talking with you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, it's Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here. By the way, if someone from the afternoon show doesn't ask Drake May if he has the yips tomorrow, I'm going to be very, very disappointed.
He said it.
In the meantime, Jermaine Wiggins of the morning show, Greg Hill Show, will be back when we come back with Wiggy.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
Keys. Key number one.
I would have a swing and hit my three keys to the game. Well, the first things first, I want to see Drake May use his legs to make plays. Josh McDaniels, Drake May, come up with a game plan that shows me that you want to use his ability to run with the football.
I got to say, so in the first half, I saw two plays in particular that gave me hope that they were going to do exactly that. Mm. There was that speed option play that May ended up tossing, and then there was the read option play, both of which came in the red zone. And I was like, oh, great. This is perfect. This is a preview of what's to come. I want more of that. And then I got none of it the rest of the game. And I think that's kind of one of the more frustrating things is I was like, oh, these are plays Drake does really well. Give him more read options. Allow him to read that edge defender. Either give it to the running back, take it himself, or even like the read option throws. Like I just, I had hope and then lost it very
quickly. Just get, you know what? Just to keep the defense honest. Like if you're going to do the RPO, to make it effective, you got to give every now and then you have to run it to so that they will honor. Honor you maybe running it and then not take the dive and then the dive hits for a big play. So the one quarterback run design is it was a first and 10 play and it was basically a quarterback keeper sweeper kind of and for like a 5-yard gain. And it was like, well, you know, if you're going to run them, do it in the more of those third and twos.
Yeah.
Critical situations where they're expecting something inside and then you bust outside.
And one of his runs was a busted screen pass. Mm.
Well, right. So he had, yes, that's right. That's exactly right. And just a note on the screens, they ran 6 screens and they sucked at it.
They were so bad.
Like Josh McDaniels.
That was disturbing for a McDaniels offense.
That's what I'm saying.
Horrendously bad.
Disturbing. 6 screens. And I love a team that's really diverse in their screens. And Josh used to be, that was a bad display of screenplay.
All right, let's hear key number two.
Second key of this game is make sure you don't let Tyreek Hill get off. He's such a dangerous receiver, so defensively, make sure you know where he is and do what you got to do to slow him down.
Tyreek Hill, I mean, people have been doing that. It's, as we very famously just heard, he's not breaking off big plays like he used to, certainly in previous years. That is, of course, you know, the Dolphins always beat the Patriots, so maybe that's something that changes today, but without Christian Gonzalez, it just makes it seem like the entire secondary has got to be that much better, and I don't know how much better they really are.
Well, with Carlton Davis, do you put him still on Hill, or do you move him over to Waddle?
After last week, I don't know if I put him on either one of those two guys, honestly.
Yeah. Like, did you Waddle think he was that bad last week?
Watching him get burned on that 20-yard, on that third and 20.
Well, he just bit on the slant.
You bite on a slant against Hill, and that's a touchdown. You know, he did have that. He basically should have had like partial credit for the interception that they got.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they marched down the field and were able to score.
The way you stop the Tyreek Hill is with two safeties deep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cover two.
So if you play cover two, baby. Chill. And you know what? Almost let him run. Let him run. Because you're not going to stop the run as effectively with cover two. But you know what? You'd rather just let them kind of work their way down the field than give up one big play by playing a blitz or single high safety. So. Play cover two.
There's a reason they've lost to the Dolphins a bunch, and they were better against them. Not great, but better against them when they had a guy like Devin McCourty in the back. He didn't let anybody get behind him. Yeah. He always played center field. Everything was in front of him. They don't do that anymore.
No, they certainly do not, and I don't think they have a Devin McCourty type in the wings right now either. No. I mean, the two safeties were two big hitters. That's it.
Yeah, they want to play physical.
Right, and not really a center fielder that they need. All right, key number three, Wiggy.
And the third thing is do what you did last week in the sense of get pressure on Tua, because if you can create a problem for him back there when he's throwing the football, you'll be able to win this football game. That's your boy, Wiggs out.
Teddy, you made the point earlier that the only time they really got any pressure on Geno was when they blitzed. Could they against a weak Miami offensive line, not like the Raiders anything special, but Miami's especially bad. Could this be, you know, a week where they win some 5-on-5 matchups?
I worry about that. I think Tua's pretty good at beating up your blitz. I do. Mm-hmm. I think it opens up lanes. That's what he's looking for, is for you to vacate those middle of the field lanes. So if you're going to blitz, do it at your own peril. I would not blitz nearly as much as they did in week one.
Yeah, I think the key is what we just talked to Tom Kern about, which is you have to be able to adjust on the fly, because they didn't do that last week. And I think you'll get an indication pretty early if Tua's feeling it, like feeling it in a good way, or if he's feeling the heat and starts being a turnover machine like he was last week. He doesn't turn over the ball a ton, but when he does, he's like totally takes himself out of it.
You know what's hard to do for teams, so young teams, a new defensive coordinator, is to adjust mid-game. Because you don't have the continuity. These guys are new. They're all trying to learn each other. So the Patriots blitzed a lot in the first half against Geno and had success. And so they came out and they did it in the second half. Well, the Raiders made adjustments at halftime, and so they knew how to handle the blitz. Well, the Patriots kept blitzing even though it wasn't effective in the second half. A good team knows how to adjust mid-game, change what their game plan is, do something different. You worry that they don't have maybe the continuity or the veterans on this defense to kind of do it like we were able to do it back in the day when I was playing.
Yeah, you got to show you that you're multiple. Like, you really do. Yeah. And I think this is the perfect opportunity to just rush four, especially right at the start. Drop seven, rush four a lot to start early in this game, and see if your big money guy in Milt Williams, your free agent signing in Harold Landry, a guy like Christian Barmore can get interior pressure, force Tua to throw one up and give you a turnover early.
You know, we never blitzed Peyton Manning. Never.
Really?
We would drop eight guys. We'd only rush three. The longer, I think Tua is just like Peyton, the longer he holds the ball, the better it is for your defense. So flood the zones. Drop eight.
I think that's one of the reasons why Brian Flores, to his credit, is one of the best defensive coordinators in football right now. On any given play, he'll drop eight or he'll blitz seven. Yeah, he's not afraid to do either, and you never know which one's coming.
Jermaine Wiggins Keys here on NFL Sunday, Football Sunday, WEEI. Coming up next, we will reset on our main takes. We'll take another look at the inactive list. A couple of people, names that aren't on it, I think, are noteworthy, which we'll get into as well. Also, what we're expecting here today, we'll have our top 10 list coming up at 12:30, and we will get to our degenerate gambling segment at the end of the show as well. That'll be coming up. And Mego's sticking around for it this week, which is a special treat. That's exciting. Teddy has to leave, so we'll have that in the top 10 list at 10:30. Coming up, though, we'll reset on all the top stories, including the inactives. That's next here on Football Sunday, WEEI.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.